Is it going? Yeah. Should I start from the beginning? As I was saying, the Buddha said, we have a choice. And most people don't realize there's a choice in their life. When I first got into the practice and I heard my main teacher, Joseph Goldstein, talk about all of this stuff. And I came to practice with a lot of suffering inside, in my heart and in my mind, and a lot of confusion, and I was very insecure and, confused. And Joseph, who was just a couple of years older than I was, didn't look very different from me, and I was from New York, and he sounded like he was from New York too, and I was expecting, I had heard, well, there's this really good meditation teacher, and I went to the first class, and he didn't look so different from me, and at first I thought, this is the great meditation teacher? He doesn't have long flowing robes or hair or whatever. And for about 10 minutes I was kind of judging that package. So this is the great meditation teacher? But then I started to hear what he was saying, and not only what he was saying, but how he was saying it. And he was saying that it's possible to not be run by your neurotic thoughts. That had never occurred to me as a possibility before. And because he didn't look so different from me, I said, I'm going for it. Because there was something that I sensed he knew that I wanted to know. And to see, oh, there's a choice here. Wow, I'm going for it. That's the most important decision that I've made in my life. That it's possible to wake up and not be lost in my confusion and my fears. Not that they don't arise. I can be confused. I can have fear. I can have all the things that I had now 40 years ago, but they don't last in the same way. And I know that there's a different place of home. So this decision is really the key. And we can be inspired by teachers or by things that we might read in a book or hear in a talk. But that's just pointing to us to make that decision. One line by the Buddha that inspired me from the very beginning, the first time I heard it, where he says, if it were not possible to free the mind of greed, hatred, and delusion, I would not tell you to do so. But it is possible. And this is why I teach. Wow. It's possible. Just even having that idea that it's possible can change everything. So, in speaking about intention, I wanted to, as I said at the very beginning of the day, talk about the two different levels of intention that occurred to me. One is intention in every moment, that we are sowing seeds for more happiness or more suffering. In every single moment, if we are acting from grasping, aversion, or confusion, we are sowing the seeds of suffering. If we are acting from generosity, kindness, and and clarity, we are sowing the seeds of happiness. And just in there, in every single moment, to realize that we are creating our unfolding, we are creating the course of our life, is a very big wake-up call to act in ways that don't cause harm or suffering to yourself or others, not because you're trying to be some kind of holy person, but very pragmatically, oh, I'm sowing the seeds of happiness, suffering or happiness. As an example, one teaching that I like is seeing at least in four different ways how the intention behind our action is sowing seeds for either of these. First, think of a time that maybe you acted less skillfully than you would have liked. Maybe you clicked the send button on the email and then realized, I don't know how if that was the best thing. Or you spoke in a way that was a bit sharper, or you let your anger lead the way. Not that it's wrong to feel anger. Anger is part of being alive, but that the words and the actions came from that place. Just think of some scenario in your life. In fact, just close your eyes for a moment so it becomes real to you. Maybe something that happened a long time ago, or maybe just yesterday. And as you do, as you remember, let's look at four different ways that you sow seeds of suffering. Notice, if you can remember, how it felt just in the action. Maybe it felt good for a moment, but notice how it felt right afterwards when you realized. Maybe there was a little feeling of unsettledness, or that maybe you didn't act so wisely. And notice what was the response from whoever was on the receiving end. Did they thank you for your feedback? Or did they have a response that was not so appreciative? And as you recall it right now, how does it feel to recall an unskillful act? Probably not so good. And the likelihood that you would repeat it that way is greater because you practice that habit in that instance. So that's four ways that an action coming out of an unwholesome intention sows seeds of suffering in the act, what comes back to you, in the memory, the recollection, and the habit practiced. Okay, so that's the not such good news. Now, I won't leave you here. Take a nice deep breath. And I'll give you the good news. Clear the board in your mind. And now, think of a time when you acted really skillfully, where you were very kind or thoughtful or caring or generous with a friend or someone that you knew, where you were just there for somebody in a very skillful way, just coming from a caring heart or a wise heart. And I invite you to recall some situation and bring that to mind. Have an image that remembers the whole scene. And here is the good news. Remember how it felt as you were acting from that kind heart in that moment? Probably pretty good. Now, recall the energy that came back to you from whoever was on the receiving end. Perhaps some appreciation, some gratitude, some warm, friendly connection. As you remember right now, how does it feel? Oh yeah, I did something really in a good way. Remember how it feels just in the recollection. Probably pretty good. And the likelihood of that occurring again is greater because you practiced that habit. So there's four ways that you sowed wholesome seeds. In the act, the energy that comes back to you, in the recalling and the memory, and the habit that's been practiced. Okay, you can open your eyes. So this is really powerful. As I said earlier today, as the Buddha said, intending, I tell you, is karma. Through intention in body, speech, and mind, where you're coming from, you are sowing the seeds of either sorrow or happiness and well-being. This is powerful. When I first heard that teaching, it made me want to really act as wisely as I could. In every moment. And as we did in that last meditation, you can bring intention also in your actions as you're going through your day, as you're about to do something, if you want to play around with it as an experiment, you might just ask yourself, oh, why am I doing this? Or what is this leading to? If you can remember, a lot of times you can't, but you might just see, oh, what's my intention behind this action? And that opens up a whole possibility of choice. Do I really want to click the send button? Or how do I want to be with this person or doing this action? And sow those seeds wisely. So that's in each moment, the mental factor of intention can be a source of very rich practice. Then there's the other dimension of intention, which is that of aspiration, that of having a vision of what we want to create in our life, as I was talking a few minutes before. Our motivation behind our actions, and is this aligned with my greater vision? As is said in a Tibetan teaching, everything rests on the tip of one's motivation. So let's talk about having a vision for ourselves. When you hear the teachings on wise understanding or wise view, and you say, yes, I'm going for it. So, first to understand that intention is different from goal. Sometimes people use the two synonymously, but it's really different. And I believe in goals. I fully believe there's a power in the mind of having an idea that you want to manifest and have a goal. And sometimes I'll write down my goals, just because the clearer I am, the more the universe can support me in it. But intention is different from goal in that it can be supportive of that goal, but intention, as I understand it, lets go of success or failure. Lets go of the timetable. Am I there yet? Let's go of passing or failing. So it's simply a kind of, as I use the phrase from the Buddhist teachings earlier today, inclining the mind and inclining the heart in a particular direction. For instance, if you come to a meditation and say, I want to be concentrated, you know, I'm going to be concentrated if it kills me. It might, if you have that kind of an attitude. But if you say, may I become as concentrated as is available to me, and you let go of making it happen. You let go of being the agent that's going to succeed or fail, but simply put out, this is what you're inviting. You can use it both in the meditation, and you can use it in a bigger way in your life. For instance, may I become as aligned with my values as I can. May I grow in wisdom as much as I can. And you making that decision, that heartfelt decision to do your part, and then letting life support you. Ah, this is where the power of intention is. Like I said, facing in the right direction. Because life will unfold in just the way it does for you. And you don't have much control over the specifics of when it's going to happen and how it's going to happen. But you do have control over the willingness to put your heart into it. And there's something really rich and juicy about that, that lets go of the failing or the passing. So, intention different from expectation, different from goal. And what happens as you get clear on your intention, on something that really inspires you, is that life seems to support us more and more. It conspires in that way. I mentioned this in the Awakening Joy workshop last weekend, that neuroscience sees that, understands how your brain responds to intention. So this is not just a kind of airy-fairy kind of a thing. Oh, how woo-woo that, I have an intention and all of a sudden magic happens. It can happen because we create with our minds. And the first line in the Buddhist teachings in the Dhammapada says, we are what we think. With our thoughts we make the world. But this is how, in a very realistic way, it works, that once you have an intention in your mind or in your heart, your brain starts to notice all the things that will support that intention. In neuroscience, this is called the confirmation bias in the brain. So, did you ever notice how once you start being on the lookout for something, you start to notice it everywhere? How many people have had that experience? Yeah, see? This is not airy-fairy California stuff. This is real. Because until you have that intention, you're going to be noticing what your beliefs are. And so if you have the belief, oh, life is a drag and everybody is going to disappoint me, that's what you're going to notice. Oh, you see? He disappointed me. I was right. Oh, she disappointed me too. Yep, it's happening all the time. Because you miss the times that don't conform to your belief. But if you start noticing or looking for how people are really good inside if they're given a chance, or want to be loved, or want to feel safe, or respond to my love, you're going to start to notice that more and more. Or if you start to notice or incline your mind to notice how amazing it is to be alive, how many blessings in my life, you're going to start to notice all the things that confirm your belief, your confirmation bias. So there's something really powerful about getting in touch with your intention. Dan Siegel, a neuroscience expert who's written a number of wonderful books, Mind Sight and The Mindful Brain, he calls it priming the brain. The intention primes your brain to notice things that you want to develop in your life. And that means also that you've got to be very patient with the process and not just be sitting there saying, well, you know, I wanted to be more loving and it's not here just yet, you know, let's get on with it, you know. No, since habits have been developed over time, you have to be very patient. As I mentioned, I love this story about Thomas Edison, about inventing the light bulb, and he went through many attempts to invent the light bulb before it was successful. And later on in his life, somebody was interviewing him and he said, Mr. Edison, how did it feel to fail 2,000 times before you invented the light bulb, before you finally succeeded? And Edison said, my good man, I did not fail. I invented the light bulb, and it was a 2,000-step process. To not be afraid to fail, and to see each time I'm trying, I'm learning more and more. This is how your intention gets supported. With that intention, that wiser intention, it's important to have sila, to have ethical behavior, as we were talking about, and as I just was mentioning, as a framework for your life, so that you're not causing harm along the way, and that your vision is aligned with the highest values, because there's a price to pay in causing harm. And so there's a nobility in developing what will really bring you happiness and bring happiness to others. Now, you might think, well, sometimes my intentions aren't so pure. I might want to do the right thing. I might want to help a friend, but I hope they see what a good person I am. Or I hope they appreciate it and maybe something good will come back to me. Has that thought ever come to you? Well, I'm doing something nice, but I can see that there's some ulterior motive there. Anybody have that? Especially when you become more and more committed to Dharma practice, there's a price to pay in having more awareness. Yes, I'm trying to be a really good Dharma practitioner. Oh, but I see this ego everywhere. Who am I kidding? So I want to say a few words about mixed intentions, because they can be deadly. The more you see for yourself, what are my motives here? And here's a little practice that I find helpful. Until you're fully enlightened, there will probably be some mixed intentions. There'll probably be a little trace of ego, or more than a trace of ego, in your actions. So don't wait until you're fully enlightened before you go ahead and do good things or act inspired by your intentions. Because if you have 90% good intention and 10% ego, if you focus on the ego, oh, what a phony I am, that 10% will grow to be 90%. And the 90% will shrink to be 10%. Because there you'll be focusing on what an egotistical, pathetic Dharma practitioner you are. And you'll destroy all the nobility in your heart. So rather than focusing on that 10%, just know, yep, not fully enlightened yet, okay. And let your actions come from that place of a good-heartedness. Then that 10% will take care of itself. And you'll reap the benefit of coming from that wholeness. Now, if it's 50-50, focus on the 50%. That will grow, and notice how good it feels to come from that place. And the other 50% will shrink. Yeah, it's there, but I don't have to feed it. And here's the really good news. If it's 10% noble, 90% ego, focus on that 10%, because that will be what grows more and more, and you'll feel for yourself how beautiful and wholesome it is to come from that place. So you don't have to wait until you're a saint. Keep on coming, staying in touch with your kind and good heart. Something else. Your intention has a lot to do with what you believe can happen. There's a beautiful teaching from a wise prosperity conscious teacher who lived last century. He wrote a book. His name was Napoleon Hill, and he wrote a book that sounds kind of not very spiritual, called Think and Grow Rich. But it's a really good book. And this was his teaching. He said, whatever the mind can conceive and believe, it can achieve. So a big part of intention is believing that it's possible to do whatever your heart longs for you to do. If you don't think it's possible, you will make it impossible. And so, intention to change, if your intention to change is great enough, you'll change. If it's not, and you just wish you could change, it probably won't happen. So, to get in touch with your belief that you can change, and you can. And lastly, one last thing, and then I'll end the talk. Getting in touch with your intention, not only for your own well-being, but when it includes the well-being of others, this is where practice becomes very, very rich. When you include and see your practice is something that you're not just doing for yourself, but for others, and everyone benefits from your practice. How do you feel around somebody who has developed a good heart and a wise heart and who you can trust? Probably pretty good, right? And all the work that they've done reminds you of the possibility. So your own practice, if it's seen in the context of being beneficial to others, this is really powerful. And I'll share with you a little story and give to you a little practice that might bring this home. I write about this in the book Awakening Joy. So you can read it there, or it'll be on this talk now. Many years ago, I was invited to go to a conference in India with the Dalai Lama. A number of Western Dharma teachers were invited, and I was really excited to go. You know, what an honor! And I was telling a friend about this, and the friend said, "Oh, how cool, how wonderful. And how are you going to get to Delhi to then go up to Dharamsala?" And I said, "Oh, well, my flight stops in Frankfurt, Germany, and then goes to Delhi." And she said, "Oh, Frankfurt, this is where Mother Meera lives." And Mother Meera is this Indian holy woman who my friend had studied with, and she said, "Oh, you really should see Mother Meera." And I said, "Oh, well, maybe I will." And then she said, "No, you should see Mother Meera." I said, "Hmm." And then I found out that Mother Meera could grant you the wish of whatever you wanted to come true. And I said, "Okay, I'll visit her." Okay. So I went there, and I got to the scene where you walk, you come up one by one in front of this Indian woman, and you bend down, and she does something. I was explained unraveling your karmic knots, or I don't know how it works. And then you look into each other's eyes, and then after a while, she closes her eyes, and that's the end. And one by one, you come up. And I got there, and I was really excited. Wow, I'm finally gonna meet this person. And then I thought, wow, she's gonna grant me whatever I wish for. What am I gonna wish for? What do I really want? And it made me think. I'd been thinking about it for a few days before, but here it was, the moment. And I didn't want to just run up and be first. I wanted to just take my time. What do I really want? And I thought, well, do I want another experience? No, they all come and go. Do I want another object, another toy, another thing? No, they all, after a while, lose their novelty. They come and go. What do I really want? What can I get in touch with that would bring me genuine happiness, that would really fulfill my heart. And as I thought about it, and I got in touch with it, and I went up there. And I don't know if she has magic powers, but focusing in that heightened moment, it was like it was etched right into my heart. This is what really moves and inspires me. And for me, it was having as much a purity of heart so I could serve my family and friends and the world and serve the Dharma. And getting in touch with that has been now 21 years later my touchstone. This is what really matters to me. Widening that intention. So I just ask you now, I invite you, just close your eyes for a moment and imagine you were in that same situation, either with some holy spiritual being or a magic genie that could grant your wish, or some being, or listening, being listened to by the universe or God or however you imagine it, that if you get clear on what will really fulfill you, it would be granted. What would it be right now? What will bring you a deepening happiness? What will bring happiness not only to yourself, but be a gift to the world? What is your true wise intention? And if you've gotten in touch with something, see if you can commit in your heart to do your part to develop that in yourself, to manifest that in your life. Make the decision to show up as best you can and let life support you in that, because there's magic in it. And I invite you to get in touch with that these next few days. You might even write it down and put it in some words that you can keep on coming back to. So this is the power of intention. Whatever one can conceive and believe, one can achieve. And facing in the right direction will be a gift to not only you, but everybody else in your life. So we don't have much time for questions, but maybe we can, if there's something that comes up from the talk or the day, take a moment or two. And we'll have more time tomorrow as well. Okay, you got it, huh? Either you got it or you're Finns and you don't ask questions, one or the other. But I feel in the room that you're with me. So it's good to share the day with you. And let's close with dedicating the merit of the day. So, here we are, having shared a day of practice. And first, feel the wholesomeness of your actions. You put in your time today just because something called you to deepen your understanding and your compassion and your wisdom. And let yourself feel the wholesomeness of that. Appreciate that you can hear that call. And with that, send some kind thoughts to yourself. May I grow in understanding and kindness. May I open to all the blessings in my life. May I know the highest happiness and peace possible to me. And now, to extend that to all of us practicing together, may all of us grow in wisdom and compassion and share our practice with everyone in our lives, with the world. And then finally, from this room, extending that out to all beings everywhere, may all be free of suffering. May all know the highest happiness and peace. And may any good that comes from our practicing here together, may it ripple out and be shared for the benefit and welfare of all beings everywhere.